Okay, this is Deborah Gordon and Roseanne Ariel with Minnie Lowenstein. We're taping for the National Council of Jewish Women, Pittsburgh section, for their oral history project. The date is
March 6th,
1992. Minnie, could you give us your name?
My name is Minnie Lowenstein.
And your birth date?
I'm born on April the 13th. 1916.
Great.
It's Jewry.
All right, so we'll just pick up from here. When they hear my coffee.
But you can't really hear what it is. You know, it's sort of like background. I mean, someone might have thought the radio was on here in the house or something.
All right, well, last time we were here, we got all the way to... you were across the border to Germany. Your husband went back to Poland. He found his youngest brother. They sold the house and bakery. And you discussed that he got some money, even though he had to wait for 3 months.
He sold the bakery, a house they built in 1930. I don't know how many rooms. He sold the whole thing for $1,000. Till he got back to Germany, he had 700 left. So this he split with his brother.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, I really didn't want him to go because it was very dangerous. But he went and he waited 3 months to be able to cross the borders in the night. Could have been killed too. So that's for that.
What did you do while he was...
Well, I started knitting in Germany for the board, for the Ort.
Oh, Ort?
Yes. Uh-huh. I had to produce, they had like a place, whoever wanted. We had to knit a certain amount on the scale, a sweater or so a day, and I'm not this fast. So I used to take it home in the night to keep up with the others. And for this we got paid, which means we got a couple pounds of flour a month with a little Crisco with some pound sugar, a few sardines, and this was our pay a month.
And so you were supposed to live off that food, could you?
Not exact. See, we were supported from the...
Red Cross?
It was from the American Joint.
Joint Distribution?
Yes. Uh-huh. We got every week, not really much to survive.
How much did you get, do you remember?
We got a loaf of bread for a day or 2 days, with a few cans of green beans, and really little. Mm-hmm. But in the meantime, see, with my profession, everywhere it saved us, between the other people. I used to do manicures, haircuts, which there they didn't really need much because it was a normal life.
The city. What city were you in?
By Stuttgart, in Wasseralfingen, a little town.
Where was that?
Stuttgart is the main city.
Oh, okay.
In Germany.
Yes.
Stuttgart,
yeah.
Yes.
Germany.
And this was Wasseralfingen, the town was named. It was a camp from trespassing people.
Okay.
We were there 3.5 years.
The displaced people.
Right. So in, after 3.5 years, finally we succeeded coming to America.
You lived in the camp, it's like your home was there, but you went to the city to work?
See, they took some houses a couple streets from the Germans. Mm-hmm. It was a little house. The whole house contained 3 rooms. Downstairs was 2 rooms, upstairs 1, and it was 3 families. Mm-hmm. A kitchen was with... 3 burners, gas, and it was put on just in the morning for a half an hour for breakfast, and they turned it off. And then lunchtime, it was again put on for an hour, and then for the evening to cook, also for an hour.
Was that one?
So it was for all three families.
Oh,
each
for three families a house.
That's right.
They gave a little house for three families.
Mm-hmm. Yes. It was according how many rooms, this how many families.
Mm-hmm. So you would have a room to yourself?
We had a room for me, my husband, my son,
mm-hmm.
and then his brother came
mm-hmm.
with him too. So in the next door, the next to us, connecting room, was another family, a mother and two daughters who were hungry. And on the third floor was one room. It was an old couple. He was from Poland,
mm-hmm.
Jewish, and she was, I think, from Russia. And one toilet.
For
to flush, you had to pour water down.
Yes, yeah. It was just like in the floor. It wasn't a toilet that had plumbing?
It didn't have the plumbing. You had to flush it down, and then once a certain time they cleaned the toilet. Yeah, it was a pretty new house. So,
And then you went to the city to work? Did you go into the city?
Yes, yeah. Yes. We went in the city. And my son went in a kindergarten there. When we arrived there, he was 4, but when we came to America, he was already 7.
Was this a German kindergarten? Or was it a special one for the kids in that place?
It was special Jewish for the kids.
And it was run by the...
By the
people in the camp?
Yes, for the people in the camp, but it was also kept from the American...
Organized by them.
Organization, yes.
What language did you speak to your son?
Well, when he was born, I spoke to him Yiddish.
Mm-hmm.
And then Russian. He went in kindergarten there in Russia.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, when I started working, as I said before, I used to go to nurse him in the nursery.
Mm-hmm.
Then I nursed him for 20 months because I didn't have what to feed him. So, and then I start working. You see, really, I don't know whether I talked about it already or I didn't, about the when I worked there in this shop where I started working, and the background was the mill,
mm-hmm.
the factory what produced, made flour,
mm-hmm.
and how I carried out. I went there and they gave me a kilogram of flour, and how I reciprocated, I shaved there. Then the
mm-hmm.
Muslims, they worked there. The director, they were Russian people,
mm-hmm.
the top. And through there, being in this barbershop, it helped me to put in my husband in the bakery.
Yeah.
He started working.
I'm just curious about your son. You said he went to a Russian kindergarten?
Yes, he spoke Russian.
Did it bother anyone that he was Jewish?
No, no. There was very many immigrants.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, I don't think the Muslims even put the kids there.
Uh-huh.
It was only for the immigrants, the Russian. I guess there was the other one, the local too, Uzbek.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Did they kind of, the Muslims, not assimilate in Russia at that time?
Oh, no, no. They are not people to assimilate. When I arrived, first, from the train to Tashkent, and when I saw the ladies, the Asian ladies walking, they have long hair, and they are made in the little braids like here, but the braids reach down to the lower the waist.
Mm-hmm.
And all around, and they wear like a kapala, kibiteka, it's called on top. And they wear capes. They wear the long capes. And they put them here. Otherwise, sometimes they put them on the head.
Mm-hmm.
And here, it's called a paranja. They cover the faces.
Mm-hmm.
But these people didn't cover the faces. They wore them for here, the long capes. And when I saw all these braids around, I thought, this is actresses. They are going to the stage. I couldn't believe this. This is.
You thought it was like a costume.
Yes, yes.
For the opera or something.
Yes. And they chew gum. They don't have regular gum like here. They have tar.
Mm-hmm.
They take a piece of tar in the mouth, and this is what they keep on chewing all the time. And when they got tired, they take a tar from the mouth and put it on this yarmulke.
Oh.
This
To save.
And, yes, and then they take it back in the mouth. And if they meet somebody, they take out from the mouth and they give them a piece to chew too, from
does
their
it,
mouth.
Does it taste good, or is it just...
How do I know?
Does it make their teeth black?
I don't think so. It
clean
doesn't.
Them, maybe.
Looks like maybe it cleans. Looks like the first they must spit out the black, and then they keep on chewing, and it doesn't melt. Listen, really, what I saw there, it's just a shame I didn't have a moving camera.
Really?
Yes. How, what can I say? How they walk, that they wear the coats on them,
How did they walk?
They walk just in like slippers,
mm-hmm.
just plain, it could be cold, and they have just a rope on top with this kibitake,
mm-hmm.
this like yarmulke.
Yeah.
And they go in the tea room.
Mm-hmm.
They sit on the table. The table is this high. And under this,
mm-hmm.
I mean in the tea room, there isn't a hall. Wherever they live,
mm-hmm.
they make a hall in under this table. And they save the sticks from the cotton what grows, and they make a fire in the fireplace. They take the coals and they put it underneath. And everybody who comes in puts the feet there, and they cover this with a blanket. And the lice are crawling naturally, but when you are hungry and you are cold, you don't care. If you care, you have no choice. So I used to go sometimes. There was an older couple who's back, and they liked me. I learned a little the language. I was easy in catching
right.
a language, yes. None do I speak right, but I picked up and I...
That's incredible.
I communicated
so
everywhere.
That language.
Everywhere. So I used to go to them, they made a pulau, and they teach me the prayers.
Mm-hmm.
You want to hear it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Bismillah rahmo rahim, lo ilohe yoblohu, Muhammadan asurovlo, vashada lo ilohe, vashada anna, Muhammadan avdahu verasavlo. This we said before eating the pulau.
Ah. That's
and
great. What does it mean? Is this
are you asking
phrase?
Me or telling me? Do I know?
Yeah.
And it's a prayer like I wouldn't understand it if you pray.
Do they take a long time teaching you, or you just they did that over and over?
They did it, and I learned, and they were so proud of me.
What language is that?
It's like Arabic.
Arabic. Okay.
Yeah, it's Uzbek. Yeah, they are Muslims. So I used to go over there if I had there a pulau when I was pregnant. So whatever we had already supper, so my husband had it, so it was double for him. And then he started working in the fields collecting cotton. And we got once a week something paid. Something like nothing, as I said before, what I worked and saved through the week.
Mm-hmm.
And then for the weekend, my husband used to go to the market and shop, a little rice, a little beans, whatever they had to pull through the weeks, till I had the baby.
In Germany, it was harder making money at that time.
In Germany, is this way. It was a civilized world. So they did not need my service because they are specialized.
Did it bother you to be in Germany after the war?
It bothered, but I didn't think I'll be this long. Mm-hmm. See, we were there just to transpass.
Uh-huh.
When we came back, we came, I guess you wasn't here when I...
She listened to the tape. So she's filled in. We had a session, just the two of us.
Yes. So I didn't like to be there. And as I say, I'm working now in the JCC, and there's a German lady coming. And she's my customer. She's German, and she came after the war in 1947. And she belongs to the Jewish community center. So once, it was just before Christmas, she asked me how I survived. And I started telling her a little my journey, how I was running from the Germans. Excuse me. And then, in Germany, I asked her, how about you in time of war? I didn't know a thing, she said. I said, Mrs. John. This is her name.
Not Jewish?
No. I was in Germany 3.5 years. I spoke to many Germans. I didn't find one to say I know something. Each one said in German, ich habe gar nichts gewusst. And that's the way you are saying. It's possible you are not guilty. But it's not possible that you didn't know. So I lost the customer.
Oh, I'm sure.
And I did not care either. She came.
When you were in Germany, you talked to people then? You asked the Germans?
Of course I spoke to Germans.
And what did they just said they didn't
That's the answer from every German. Ich habe gar nichts gewusst. I didn't know a thing.
Weren't there children in the army? Were there children or were they in the army?
Of course they were.
What did they think happened to the people?
Oh, they didn't want to talk about it. They didn't, they were, listen, it's tragic. Unfortunately, they didn't care to see the Jews there in Germany. But it was just to pass by. So there, we cannot accuse the whole world. Maybe there was a few innocent too. After the war is more guilty ones than before the war, because before I don't think they knew as much to be against as in time for war and after the war. It's like in Germany, and like in Poland. I told you when they killed that, we were there when it was a pogrom, and I was there and I was scared to death. I went to work there. How I left in the middle.
Yeah, you told me.
And I ran.
Let's get the chronology going on how from Germany you were there 3 years and then you came here. Is that correct?
Yes.
And you want
to. Well,
just going from.
It's the same token. I have very nice relatives.
Mm-hmm.
They are very nice people. But here in America it's this way. If you give donations and you are put in the books everywhere and everybody knows, this is for the face. Otherwise, as I say, they are nice people. I was very thrilled and happy to have somebody. My family was all erased.
Oh yeah, it fills in about when you were in Germany, I'm sure you were trying to find information. And some of your family survived, so...
Yes.
How did you find them?
Then I arrived to Poland. We were in a town what was occupied, a German town. I remember the address on my head, in my head, and I wrote to Mikispot.
there from Poland, goes to McKeesport.
Yes.
And who was in McKeesport?
I had my father's brother there.
Oh, he came a long time ago.
He came before the war, much before his children were born.
What was
here.
His name?
Joshowitz. Unfortunate, he was killed. In this time, when we were in Germany, he was killed in an automobile accident.
Here?
Yes. So, soon as he got the letter from me, he answered me. He told me he was alive.
Before he got killed, he got the letter?
Before, sure.
But before you
the
got
correspondent.
Now, there were other people in Europe who had written him also?
Yes.
Other family
It happened this way. My sister, I don't know whether you had it in the record. Me, myself, would like to listen to it. I would know what I said. So my sister, two sisters, they were in Germany. And when they was liberated, there was American soldiers. And they met them. And she told them that she has an uncle in McKeesport. They took pictures of her. My aunt wanted to give them to me, but she never found them. Still in the liberating clothes from the concentration camp. Mm-hmm. And told them that they too survived.
Your two sisters?
We were five sisters and two brothers.
And two of your
and
sisters?
And we survived three sisters. One was killed here not long ago.
Right.
So, and my brother was hungry, but we didn't know whether he survived. I told you how they took him and how he escaped.
Well, that story, we need to hear all those stories, but it's just a question of where we want to go right now. Because you briefly mentioned each of those, and each of those stories seem incredible.
Yeah. So, how she and my sister...
Your sisters were together the whole time?
Two sisters. There was the oldest sister, the two kids, went to the gas chambers because she had two kids.
What was her name?
They were, Dora, Deborah.
Uh-huh. And then?
And the two kids, so there is no chance. Then the youngest sister was with these two sisters together, but...
How old were they? Well, they were, their names?
Young kids.
Yeah.
Young kids.
They were teenagers, right?
Teenagers, all of them.
And they were together the whole time?
And they were together till finally they separated them. The one, the youngest, because she was too weak to go to work. And how they
where
were...
Where, what camp were they?
In Auschwitz. So, these two sisters used to save a little soup. The other sister was on the other side, and there was fence, and they used to go to the fence and dig with the hands a little hole and to push under the soup, and she used to take, and there was many killed this way from the SS. So one day when they were digging and want to give, they realized there is a SS watching, so they yelled to her in Hungarian, "Don't come," because they couldn't. But one cousin of mine was shot before a liberation. He went to steal at the table. I mean, it's incredible.
So actually, you said his two sisters would be the youngest, so there were three.
Was but trying to help her.
The youngest one was not a worker, so she was in a different camp.
They were together till she was so undernourished she couldn't anymore, so they separated them. The weaker ones, they separated to take to the gas chambers, but they did not have enough time for this. So anyway, when she was liberated, she died in Bergen-Belsen. They got typhoid fever.
The youngest one died after liberation.
I don't know after or before she died already there.
The youngest died from typhoid.
In these two, they escaped.
And the two stronger sisters?
Yeah, they promised them a loaf of bread for a week. And they dragged them to go. And this kept them going because of the promise. And they arrived finally.
Who promised them bread?
The SS, the Germans.
They said that if they kept working, they would get
walking. See, they was already getting away from there because the war was getting closer.
Oh, they didn't want them to stay there and be found.
No, they killed a lot on the road, and a lot just fell like the flies. They was already exhausted.
Like the youngest sister died, you think, on the road?
I don't know. I don't know. Anyway.
Did they know that liberation was right around the corner? Did they know that they were...
They didn't know. You know, when they keep you, be that.
You don't know.
When they escaped and they saw a tree with fruit growing, they looked at it like they never saw something like it. You know, they take the whole human feeling out of you.
Oh, so your sisters were young also? They were like
yes, my sister, the one, she is 6 years younger, and the one who was killed here was 8 years younger for me.
So what were their names?
This one is Regina. The second one was Bertha. Mm-hmm. And the third one was Esther.
That was the youngest, right?
Yes. And
how did you find them then?
Through my uncle.
Your two sisters?
First of all, for some reason, I wrote from Asia, home. And I wrote, see, I was engaged to be married. My boyfriend left for Israel when I was still home.
Right.
And that's the way I ended up where I am, because I was on the way to go to Israel. So I wrote to his home too. And this is this town where I used to have my shop. So they got the letter and they gave it to my sister.
So they knew you were alive.
And they knew I am alive. And then we got contacted through my uncle from America.
Now how did they know your sister? How did they find your sister?
My sister wrote to them too.
Oh,
so my sister wrote with this American soldier.
Oh, so I guess everyone
was take it back. When they were being marched away from the camp.
When they was marched from the camp, they was on a hill. And they pretended my sister, both sisters and a neighbor, a girl, she's in Israel, I think, because they are walking down like to the toilet to go. And then my sister said, she always was a leader, she's a very smart, intelligent woman, and she said, let's not get back. There was other girls too, and they did go back for fear, they didn't want to, but these three walked down in a little town. And when they saw a loaf of bread in a window in a store, they went in to ask if they can walk. And they looked at them, walked skeletons.
They knew that
walking.
They,
yeah. They looked like skeletons anyway. So they didn't want them. In the meantime, there
was this in Germany?
In Czechoslovakia.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Then there was an old little man. He was German, the Volksdeutsch, they call him. They saw them and he called them and took him in.
You said he was a Dutchman?
Yes. They took him in, and when they looked at these three skeletons, they start talking. Oh, Menschenskinder. It's like they couldn't believe how people, they did not know these are Jewish girls. They spoke in Romanian and they thought they are Romanians. So they took him in, and first they took off they put a big pot of potatoes, little potatoes in the skin to cook. And this was supposed to be for the family, for them too. And they gave, everybody should clean. And the way they cleaned, they ate them. And what they cleaned, they ate too. They didn't realize really this is the way, it has to be for everybody.
So
when they finished the potatoes, they looked at each other. Then they realized this was supposed to be for all of them. So then they took the clothes off of them, and they sent them on the attic from the stable. There was hay, and they wash their clothes. The stripes, my sister said, this was the happiest night in her life for years.
She had hope for the first time.
Not only hope, they felt free. And then, my sister is a very good dressmaker, seamstress. She used to sew for them. And my other sister, she knits very beautiful. In fact, I have a lot of things. Some I'll show you what she made, handwork. This is something to see. And the other girl helped them with cleaning and everything. So they were there for a week. Then they announced in this little town, if they'll catch somebody hiding from the concentration camp people, they'll kill them all, which they usually did. So they were very scared. And the daughter, there was an older daughter, and she used to come and bring for my sister work to sew, and for this she brought food for her, for them. So they was fighting, the daughter with them, but they didn't know. So the daughter called my sister on the side and said, listen, tomorrow morning my parents are going to tell you to leave and you are going to come to me, because she knew where she lives. She took her there for sewing.